Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
The Penguins have it. Here's a backhander by Hornquist. He shoots and scores. Patrick Hornquist on the backhander beats Hopi off his glove, and he smoked him like a bad cigar. The Penguins lead 2-0. And it comes to Ovechkin, flick it towards the net. It came up in the air. 3 seconds to go. It comes over to Carlson. And that is it. Time has run out. Mr. President, there are no further questions. The Pittsburgh Penguins have moved into Washington and have defeated the Capitals as they blank them 2-0. The shutout by Marc-Andre Fleury.
Mike Lang with a call on the Penguins Radio Network. The goal by Hornquist that made it 2-0. And then the ending. The Capitals are gone. Next, it's the Ottawa Senators. All right. Let's shift gears from Penguins to Pirates. Chris Mack from the Pirates Radio Network joins us. Chris, welcome back. It's great to hear you again.
Steve, good to be back. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good.
All right, let's the emotional blow of Jameson Taillon. I mean, it's because, look, these guys are all friends in there. They're all interconnected. Mm-hmm. Many of them came up together. How tough has that part been emotionally from what you can judge?
You know, at first I thought, okay, this is a well-balanced team and emotionally well-balanced guy that this is happening to in Jameson Taillon. But, you know, the more I think about it after watching them the past few nights, it almost seems like they're, you know how when you get bad news about a loved one, you kind of spend the next few days in a fog, right? You kind of just waltz through your day like a zombie. And I tell you what, the way they played baseball the last few days, they look like they were just kind of going through the motions in some cases.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, when you're their age, I think you forget, you have that feeling of immortality, invincibility, and suddenly a 25-year-old has something like that, and I think there's a shock to it, don't you think?
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, you know, J-Mo's a great kid. If there's any 25-year-old this could happen to, that you would count on him to take it well, he's the one, you know? Yeah. Incredibly well-balanced, like I said, emotionally and psychologically. And that will, you know, his teammates will feed off that probably once they're back home and able to interact with him more on a daily basis, I would think. But, yeah, it's got to be tough. I can't even imagine. You know, Chad Kuhl, who is his roommate, I think, and is also similarly, at least off the field, very well balanced emotionally and psychologically. You can tell sometimes that he gets fired up on the field, but I think even for someone who spends every day with Jameson like him, it can be hard to look at a guy and say, man, here we go again with this guy. I mean, first the Tommy John and then the sports hernia, and now we're going through this, which obviously is a much more serious threat to his health. But sounds like, I mean, we haven't gotten, you know, any reports on the follow-up testing they did after the surgery the other day, but the hope would be that those reports are good.
Right, exactly. Now let's bring to from something that is awful and unfortunately happens to self-inflicted, Starling Marte. Mm-hmm. What kind of adjustment has that been, and has the organization at any point considered, you know, maybe we need to make a deal and get somebody else in here, or they want to stamp pad with what they have?
You know, I think, unfortunately, Steve, they don't have the resources that they feel are expendable enough to make a deal for a replacement or to pick up a replacement. And those resources would be prospects and, in some cases, money. Leonis Martin was a guy who was designated by the Mariners right after the Marte suspension happened, and a lot of people pointed to him and said, look, great glove guy, good speed, doesn't hit all that well, but the fact is Leonis Martin makes $4.5 million, and the Pirates would have to pick that up and then, you know, basically be relegated to using him as a fourth outfielder once Marte returns in July. So, there may have been some poking around at depth guys on other rosters and in other organizations, but I think we've seen that the loss of Marte is going to hit this team hard, not just offensively. That's been very clear. They had two more hits in this last series than the Dodgers had runs in the first game. 14 hits the whole series. Dodgers scored 12 runs in the first game. So, offensively, they're not scoring runs. Defensively, it puts them in a bad spot because you've got John Jaso in right some nights, and you've got, Gregory Polanco even in right the last couple of nights has not looked very comfortable again. So you've got a lack of offense. You've got a negative fielding. They've got, according to the metrics anyway, the worst defensive war in the league right now by far. And that doesn't help the starting pitching. So you get a decent start from a guy like Ivan Nova the other night. You get good starts from Cole, and even Cool, after he got through the first last night, settled down. Glasnow has shown a history of that, settling down after one bad inning now. And these guys have nothing to show for it because the Pirates are lucky to scratch across four runs.
And they weren't hitting when Marte was in the lineup, so it's not,
right. And then you compound it with the loss of Frazier and Freeze, and all of a sudden you're looking at four offensive catalysts gone. No Gung, no Marte, no Frazier, no Freeze.
Right.
And, all of a sudden, if you looked at the lineup last night, you got past the first five spots in the order, and you went, who are these guys? It's the Pittsburgh Indians,
Yeah.
It's Max Moroff, it's Chris Bosch, it's Jose Osuna. Nothing against those kids. Some of them can contribute. We've seen some of them contribute already. But those are guys that you see contribute a little bit here and there throughout the season. They're not the guys that are hitting in the heart of your order in the middle of May if you're going to be a serious contender. So, unfortunately, 14 and 20 right now seems to be the sum of their parts, the sum of their efforts. That's what they are right now, unfortunately. I mean, they're probably a few games better if Frazier and Freeze have been around the whole time. Maybe they're a 17 and 17 team, maybe. But they're going to have a lot of things go right offensively and defensively until Marte gets back, and who knows what the deal is with Gung at this point, to just remain around 500 and remain within shouting distance, I think.
I talked with Frank Coonley, who was on the show with the other day, and I brought up the topic of hitting, or better yet, the ball being put in play.
Mm-hmm.
And this was coming off the Yankees-Cubs game where 48 strikeouts occurred in the 18-inning game. Now, you break it down to 24 strikeouts in a 9-inning game, that's still 44% of your outs being strikeouts in a game.
Yeah, and I think that's a shift that we've seen in the game overall, is guys are trying to find more power. They're also swinging and missing a lot more. I mean, look at a guy like Kyle Schwarber. He's still in the leadoff spot for the Cubs. Joe Maddon's not moving away from that because Kyle Schwarber has the ability to make it 1-0 more often than not with the first at-bat of the game.
Right.
We can argue about that. We can argue about a guy like Josh Harrison leading off, but, in the Pirates case right now, until Frazier's back, he's probably their best option. 3-for-4 last night. It's a different game than when we were kids watching baseball. You look back on, even before we were kids, go all the way back to like DiMaggio and Williams and going back and forth for batting titles in the late 40s, early 50s, when those guys would strike out as many times in a season as Andrew McCutchen strikes out in a week now.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It was a completely different ball game. It was about putting it in play and not that's not still the case, but it's why the shift, for example, works still. You know, we're 5-6 seasons into big data showing us that the shift can still beat hitters because they're not willing to get away from their pull tendencies because they want to pull the ball and hit it as hard as possible rather than just punch it the other way and take what's given to them. So, I mean, we're starting to see teams come around on that. We're starting to see hitters come around on that. But then there's some hitting coaches that are still coaching the uppercut swing and get underneath the ball and and hit it up in the air and drive it. So it's, you know, it's an all or nothing game for some teams right now. For the Pirates, it's very much nothing.
Obviously, DiMaggio is one of the greats of the greats, but he had 361 home runs in his career and struck out 369 times.
Insane. Think about that. Think about that. That is probably three or four seasons for a guy like Kyle Schwarber or, you know, Andrew McCutchen. I mean, it's in all honesty, a guy that doesn't strike out 100 times now probably is not a big power hitter. You just don't see efficient swings like that.
Yeah, the last time we saw pitching dominate like this was 68. And two things happened in 69. A, they lowered the mound, mm-hmm. but they also had four expansion teams that came in, which diluted the talent base even more so. Moving on to Arizona. All right, what are a couple of things that you'd like to see coming out of Arizona that then set them in a direction they need to go in?
Well, I mean, I think first and foremost, they've got to get the fundamentals of fielding down again. You know, I hate to keep harping on that, but you know, if that means taking the two or three strikeouts Gift and Gopay is going to give you every night in the eight spot, unfortunately, with the offense you have, maybe you can't afford to do that. But you know, his glove is going to be in there,
yes.
And it's going to play well. You know, Gregory Polanco, who just, you know, looked lost two nights ago, and not much better last night in right field at Dodger Stadium. Andrew McCutchen is still doesn't show the he shows similar range, maybe slightly better than what he showed last year in center field. He was doing fine in right field, but the shift back to center, if you look at ultimate zone rating and measurements like that, he's still not getting the balls that he should be getting to. I think of the one in the left center gap last night that he probably ill-advisedly dove for amongst them. So, you know, they don't have. It's funny how losing one guy creates this trickle-down, but it really does. I mean, you lose Marte, and all of a sudden McCutchen's back in center. Polanco's, I mean, whether Marte was there next to him or not, was not looking great. The infield defense, you know, I imagine when Frazier comes back, they probably put him in left, and maybe that means once Freeze is back as well, a shift back to everyday second base for Josh Harrison, which could help a little bit. But I want to see them get Frazier back this weekend, hopefully. It sounds like it's a short rehab stint for him in Indy. And then, you know, let's make double digits in the hit column a really simple goal for this weekend. You know, let's make four or five runs per ball game, a very simple goal. Let's get some offense going, and let's not keep wiping it out via terrible defense. I just want to see take two in Arizona this weekend, steady the ship a little bit, come back home, because next week doesn't get any easier. The Nationals are in town, and if you want to talk about, you know, big offense like they saw from the Dodgers the last three nights, they're going to get it against the Nationals again. So don't give them extra outs with your gloves, and just, you know, get on base a little bit more. Try to scratch some more runs across. They still have a cleanup hitter who doesn't have a home run this year. So there's. I mean, we could go up and down the list of discouraging offensive signs as well.
Chris, it's always a pleasure. It's great to hear from you.
You too, Steve. I always love coming on.
Chris Mack, Pirates Radio Network. We'll come back with more in a moment and your comments at 1-800-795-9565. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Kia is doing it again, putting the beach within your reach with the Summers on Us sales event.
I want to see you in a Kia.
It's back again this May. Buy a new in-stock 2017 Optima Forte or Soul and pay nothing for the summer.
That's right, nada, zilch, nothing.
In fact, your first payment won't be due until October. And 2017 Sereno start at just $24,973. With Kia taking care of your first two payments and 90 days deferred payments, you get up to 5 months before your first payment is due.
But that's not all.
You'll also get 0% financing for up to 66 months. And with Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty, we're talking a worry-free ride to your vacation destination and no payments to make. It's the Summers on Us sales event at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf. SMC, selling more cars and sticking more cash into your vacation fund.
Tax extra. 0% APR financing to well-qualified customers. PMF. Restrictions apply. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to kia.com.
The tour, the coach's caravan, has been continuing. It stopped today. I think it was in Pittsburgh last night. I think it was in Altoona today for lunch. A topic that, of course, if you're going to go to Pittsburgh or you're going to go to Altoona, it's going to come up is about the Pitt series, which, of course, came back last year at Heinz Field. They're going to play it again this year at Beaver Stadium. Then next year goes back to Heinz Field. Then in 19, it'll be at Beaver Stadium. And people ask about playing Pitt every year. It's an interesting question. And my answer has stayed consistent the entire time. If you had 8 conference games, which meant you have 4 non-conference games, yeah, that's fine. I mean, I don't know if I want to play them every year, like it's some conference game, but, you know, it'd be fine. But when you're pigeonholed in your non-conference by having 9 conference games, your hands get tied. I don't want... There's two things I want you to look at. One is a question, and one is a statement. So let's start with the statement first. I don't want Penn State to be in the position Iowa's in. Iowa is stuck playing Iowa State every year. Iowa's schedule is ripped every year. Ripped. And part of the reasons it's ripped is that they're stuck playing Iowa State for that Cy-Hawk game every year. That doesn't do Iowa any good at all. They have to play the darn thing, but again, it gives them no scheduling flexibility.
Yeah, you know, we talk about the Penn State Pitt rivalry here in the state and how many fans would love to see the game played every single year. Just be curious to tap into the Iowa football clientele out there just to see how much they would love that rivalry to continue, or if they look at big picture and they look, well, if we want to increase our chances to eventually get in that Final Four in the college football playoff, something should be done with the schedule.
At Penn State, in the years I've been here, which might be one or two, it's always been the stated goal here to win the national championship. Now, if you believe that you can schedule Pitt and win the national championship, then fine. I'm all for that. But I don't think that when it comes down to those, when there's only 4 teams that can make the college football playoff, every once in a while you're going to get down to a year where there's going to be a subtle tiebreaker in there within the room. And Sandy Barber, to me, with James Franklin, hit it out of the park when they put Auburn on the schedule in 21 and 22. Now, we don't know in 21 and 22 what Penn State will be. We don't know what in 21 or 22 Auburn will be. But on this particular day, what nationally is of more interest and greater perception? Penn State Pitt or Penn State Auburn? Which one perception-wise? You're sitting at ESPN. What intrigues you more? Penn State Auburn intrigues you more. Auburn, upper-level SEC team. Penn State, upper-level Big Ten team. Intersectional game. Wow. I'm not all that interested in seeing Penn State be the champion of Western Pennsylvania. I am very interested in seeing Penn State be a national champion and a Big Ten champion. And I said last year, and I'll go right back to it. A win over Ohio State. This is last year. I said it a year ago, before it happened. A win over Ohio State is exponentially more important to Penn State than a win over Pitt. Well, is anybody out there going to tell me right now I'm wrong? Now that you've seen it happen? How many times did I say that last year, Sean?
Oh, it was a slam dunk before the game took place. No question.
I'm saying over and over again. A win over Ohio State, and if you were to win over Michigan, means exponentially more now to Penn State than beating Pitt. I mean, I know there are people, especially in the western part of the state, that want the bragging rights for the year. I've got it. But guess what? Hey, what would make you happier? Beating Pitt last year and then being an also-ran in the Big Ten? Or would it be being a Big Ten champion winning the Big Ten championship game, beating Ohio State along the way, oh, and going to the Rose Bowl. Okay? What's better other than being in the Final Four in the college football playoff? What's better? Yeah, I want to think big. I want to strive big. Pitt, to its credit, had a really good year last year. They beat Clemson. They beat Penn State. Unfortunately for them, in the other games they played, they were 6-5. Right? Well, they were an 8-5 football team last year, right? Does that make sense? So in the other 11 games, they're 6-5. They don't give you enough, to use a basketball term, RPI bump on a national basis. Now, Washington got away with it last year. Washington was able to get away with a non-conference schedule where the toughest game was Rutgers. But also the College Football Playoff Committee took the safe route last year. There were two undefeated teams, one of them being Western Michigan, so they're out. So they have one undefeated team and 3-1 loss teams. Those are the four teams they put into the College Football Playoff. Then they did the cosmetic thing and they jumped Penn State past Michigan. Hey, Penn State 5 and Michigan 6 because Penn State won the Big Ten championship. That, in terms of the ranking and where you go and what you do, means nothing. It was totally cosmetic. But that was them taking the safe way out in every area. Well, there's going to be some season where the safe way out is not the way out. And a win over Auburn in an intersectional game may be better than what the other guy played in its non-conference. Remember, Ohio State got in and beat Oklahoma on the road.
Marcellin's Grove, Sunbury, and Lewisburg turn first for news. Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our sports bozo of the day. I think Matt Harvey is an interesting case, don't you? Play golf, don't feel good, don't show up at the park, and mess with the Mets. Yep. I think he wins. All right. Dick Girardi on the Preakness, by the way, next week. Looking forward to that. The Pitt thing is an interesting... it's an interesting case in that you've had two longtime rivals. I mean, you can break up rivalries in a lot of different ways. For example, the Oklahoma-Nebraska rivalry was actually broken up by the Big 12. They put Oklahoma and Nebraska into different divisions. Well, when they put them into different divisions, they could not play every year because, you know, the Big 12 at that time, you had to rotate. You played 8 conference games, which meant there were 3 teams that had to rotate off your schedule 2 years at a time. Well, Oklahoma and Nebraska were in different divisions, so there was a period of time, a couple of years, they rotated off the schedule, and then they stopped being the last game of the season. They were a middle of the season game. So even within your own conference, you can end up changing rivalries and breaking up long-time rivalries, even within a conference. And finally, Nebraska eventually left. Pitt made, you know, it's, you know, I mean, let's face it. Pitt made decisions years ago, and it was their decisions. I mean, don't let anybody tell you differently on this stuff, because I was there when this was happening. I had several long talks with Joe when this was happening about the All Sports Conference and things like that. I got a little more working knowledge of it than most people do. And the bottom line is Pitt made a decision that they thought going to the Big East was better. And you know what? For 30 years, they were absolutely right. That 30-year run in the Big East was great for Pitt. But what Pitt misjudged as an athletic department, they misjudged two things in the athletic department at Pitt. I mean, and these ended up being two huge mistakes that they've never been able to overcome. When they made the move to the Big East, it was great for them in basketball. Great for them. But what they misjudged was that college football would take over the economic model. They missed it completely. And Joe knew it was taking over the economic model. The reason Joe knew it is Joe was on the college football television committee. He knew where it was going. And remember the old CFA, the College Football Association? Chuck Nyhanis and Joe Paterno were the ones that were the driving forces in that. So he knew where it was going. And Pitt wouldn't listen. Just wouldn't. And then the next thing that Pitt misjudged, which made them just go, yeah, doing what, is when Penn State joined the Big Ten. Okay? I mean, two major decisions where Pitt did not see the future. And guess what? Now, what, Penn State's got to double back and bail them out? Look, I want Penn State to play for the national championship. If playing and beating Pitt gets them to the national title game, I'm all for it. But my gut tells me, just in the pure landscape of it, an intersectional game with somebody like Auburn does more. Dick in Milton joins us. Hi, Dick. How are you today?
I'm good, Steve. I wanted to, well, first of all, let me comment on professional hockey. I think I told you last year I was very disappointed for the first time in I don't know how long there wasn't a Canadian team in the NHL playoffs, and obviously Ottawa Senators are back. And it makes me happy because I think hockey is a Canadian sport, and that's my opinion.
And Edmonton almost got there.
Right. We discussed this last year. I said I don't think you should have an NHL team that can't make ice outside in the winter. That's my and I still believe that. That's how I feel about it. It's just, you know. But anyhow, what I wanted to really comment about a couple of days ago when Sean was talking about getting excited about his nephew's baseball, and this isn't meant anything personal against him, but for somebody that's been around sports forever, I just think there's nothing that can ruin a game faster than the fan. I mean, I don't care if it's a little league. I don't care if it's high school basketball. I don't care if it's college sports at times, or I don't care if it's the Boston Red Sox and the Baltimore Orioles, somebody throwing peanuts on the field at Adam Jones. I just think over the years, especially when you get down to sometimes at the high school level, sometimes they actually have to play the games without fans because the fans are that unruly. I mean, I've seen it in Harrisburg area. You've seen it happen. High school basketball.
Fans have the ability to really enhance the experience because they can set the tone in the atmosphere in a ballpark or a stadium or an arena. They also have the ability, the unruly ones, to ruin it for everybody else.
Well, I really think that, and this is, again, nothing personal against Sean or his nephew's baseball team, but
no,
I've been around so many little leagues. I don't mean
Dick,
I mean little league.
Just go after him hard.
What's that?
Just go after Sean hard.
No. But I've been it. I've been umpire. I was actually umpire a baseball game one time and went down there, and the fans really got unruly, and it irritated me because the score was really lopsided, and they got upset about what they considered a bad call, and team was up by about 16 runs. And it was the fans that was ahead that were unruly. That's what got me. Not unruly. They were upset. So I said, this is absurd. You know, it's a little league baseball game. When you have a
15
runs game and with about two innings to go, why would you get upset about what you considered a bad call? It just irritated me, and I've been irritated somewhat about fans ever since because I've seen it, wrestling, football. It's a little harder in football because you're a little bit removed from the playing field as opposed to basketball.
Right.
Basketball, you're just right on top of the high school action sometimes. Fans can get unruly.
No question.
And Little League Baseball, I don't mean wind sport either because there's too many much security, but a local little game, parents live through their kids, and they can ruin the game for that child on the field, that young man on the field, or sometimes in this case, young lady.
So, well, you know, and you could also have the obsessed uncle.
Well, well, I'm not going to go there. I mean, he sounded like he actually was admitting his own fault in that, his own shortcomings, I guess. So if he has to do something else, keep score or something where he's not involved with the
did that last night, and we have turned the corner, Dick. We kept score last night, and then we no turning back from here.
I heard you, and maybe that's a good spot for you, where you can, or for your nephew.
I've said before too. It's like I'd rather volunteer and be up in the box and be like PA announcer or run the scoreboard. Yeah. I'm kind of in my element, and
parking lot attendant.
Okay, yeah.
I'm gonna let you go on this last one, but maybe after the game, where you're just a fan, maybe you should have your nephew analyze your participation as a fan. Say, how'd I do, whatever.
He's probably done that in his mind before. Sooner or later, he'll bring it up when I least expect it.
So. Yeah, I hate to have to think his teammates, who is that guy over there? And he has to sheepishly say, oh, that's my uncle, Sean. You know, that's my point.
I mean, you don't want the question asked in this way. Who's that nut?
Yeah.
I mean, even a couple drunken fans at Beaver Stadium can ruin a fan for a whole people around them.
Absolutely.
You don't see them in the press box up there, Steve, but they happen around you sometimes.
Oh, no. Sometimes they're down below me.
I mean, I can live with them in the parking lot, but when they're sitting in a row in front of you or behind you, it's a little bit out of hand at times.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just me. That's my comment on fans today.
Good. Appreciate
it.
Bye. Right, see you, Dick.
You got it.
Yeah. He certainly took you properly to task.
He did. Well, he and I, we've gone past the introductory period, so yeah, now we can... Gloves are off. No, he made good strides last night, so yeah, I was happy with myself. So,
no, say for example, you have a child that's like, I don't know, let's pick a sport, high school football.
Right.
And gets into maybe 8 plays all season. Right? And then the father of that child has to analyze all 8 plays for months.
Who could that be?
Right. Do you know how painful that is? On the receiving end of that? Oh, wait. You do know.
Yes. Year after year after year.
He took on the blocker at the 20-yard line, and he tried to shed him. It's like, oh, I'd like to put him on the Syrian interrogation unit. Okay, hey, they're over there, 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 there. Just don't tell us about suit light anymore.
On to Albright.
The Taliban guy's giving you information left and right. Enough of what he did on the third play. Put him on the interrogation unit.
Reminds me of that scene in Mel Brooks' movie History of the World Part 1 where they're singing the Spanish Inquisition.
is that the one where he says, I give you the 15, and all of a sudden he drops a tablet. 10!
10 commandments! 10 commandments. That's it.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. Dick's absolutely right. And how much now, for example, and this doesn't happen, and I'm not going to say this happens in Little League, but for example, you wonder, and it's a good point, you wonder for some fans the inability to handle refreshing adult beverages, what an influence it plays in how they conduct themselves in a stadium or a ballpark or an arena. How much does gambling affect conduct in a stadium, arena, or ballpark? Now, for example, you have X amount in the game, and they're either not winning or they're not winning by enough. How unruly, because it's become so personal, is it for you to go through the experience? You know, and obviously the beverage part does play a role. And it's not just, I mean, do you think a coach or a player, especially, and as Dick properly pointed out, a football stadium, do you think a coach or a player actually can hear you? Why didn't you cut it back? What do you want, Barkley to stop, walk over and tell you, well, I went to the left, it was kind of covered there. It's like, did somebody yell over there? Really? I don't think so. But Dick's right. And in the Little League experience, I mean, people like you have to be stopped.
Well, I'm stopping myself before any problem comes up, so.
Oh, I mean, do we have to chaperone you? I mean, what's going on?
No. It's just my fandom was getting the best of me last weekend, so I just had to look at myself in the mirror and had to dial it back.
What does your wife say?
Oh, geez, she's like, you know, she sits further and further away from me.
I mean, she's salt of the earth. She's, you know, she's great.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I'm a lucky guy, trust me.
I mean,
outkick my coverage on that.
I mean,
trust me, and
openly reject you in a public forum.
Actually, this week marks the 30th anniversary of our first date.
I don't really know what to say about that. Trying to think of it for her point.
No, I'm just thinking that could be one up I have on her. I don't know if she would realize the exact date of our first date, but it was this week back in 87.
Well, I think she probably feels like it was 60 years.
A lot of days? You're right.
But, I mean, you're right. I mean, when my parents never did this to me, ever. Never. My parents never. My father's a quiet man to begin with. Very quiet man. And when they went to games, they just went. Now, my mother would tell me that when I played football, for example, that she would only watch me. She didn't watch the rest of the game. She just would watch me. I think part of it was she wanted to make sure I got up every single time. But that's all she would do. She would just watch me. My father never said much and was always, hey, I did a good job. You know, that was about, you know, it. That's about all he'd say. So he never, you know, Little League games, I'd be out there pitching or whatever. And you know what? No, they wouldn't say anything. In fact, my mother, because I can't even remember the last time my mom even went to a Little League game I was in. So they didn't say much. Now, obviously, I had other parents around me that said more than they'd be yelling at umpires and things like that. You know, and there's certain ways that you talk to an umpire. And I'll tell you about one experience I had when I was coaching in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
102 years in business is spectacular for you. Here's why. During the month of May, Sunbury Motors Ford is going to sell 102 new Fords by discounting every new Ford to the lowest price possible. Plus, give you more for your trade. SMC is where you want to be if you want to choose from 39 new Escapes starting at $19,380. SMC is where you want to be if you want to choose from new F-150s starting at $24,919. Sunbury Motors has 115 new Ford trucks to choose from. See why the F-150 has been America's best-selling truck for 40 consecutive years.
One is sold every 43 seconds.
SMC is where you want to be for 0% financing for up to 60 months on Escapes, Edges, and Explorers, and 0% for 72 months on Focuses and Fusions. Now is the time to take advantage of Sunbury Motors' goal to sell 102 new Fords in May. SMC's goal is your gain. Sunbury Motors and the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for 102 years.
So, I'm coaching a Little League game. My son Christopher, I think, is playing in the game. And no, we're not very good. It's the way it goes. You know, but you know, you want to make sure you're playing kids as many innings as possible and the whole thing. It was one of those years where I had a player who struggled, and I put him at second base, and every ball was hit the second base. Then the next inning, I put him in right field. Every ball was hit the right field. And the next inning, I put him in left field. Every ball was hit the left field. I felt so awful for the kid because I was trying to protect him, you know? And, I mean, it had nothing to do with the game. I mean, you're not going to win the game. I was trying to protect him so that when the inning was over, you know, whatever. So the opposing team is sitting there, and they have one out, and the base is loaded. Now, during the preseason, Sam Phillips, who's the president of Gardner's Candies, right, I've known Sammy for 30-something years. Sam is a huge baseball guy, really good umpire. Sam Felt's a really good umpire. So in the preseason, he said, hey, a point of emphasis this year is going to be the infield fly rule. And then he looks over, he says, hey, Steve, he says, tell us about the infield fly rule. I said, okay, well, here's the rule. And I explained, you know, first and second, bases loaded, one out, nobody out, balls popped up in the infield that the umpire feels is a reasonable play in order to protect the runners, the batter's automatically out, and the runners advance at their own risk. Okay. So, bases loaded, one out, and this kid pops it up to my first baseman. And my first baseman is there and drops the ball. So now everybody starts running all over the bases. And, of course, he throws it to third, and he misses. He throws it to second, it goes in the outfield. The left fielder throws it to third, And I'm leaning against the post watching all this. I'm just leaning against the post watching this, thinking, here we go, the Bad News Bears are getting it done again. So the kid comes all the way around, and it ends up being, quote, a grand slam. So Bill Smith is the home plate umpire. So I get off the post there, and I walk up to Bill, and I said, hey, Bill, isn't the batter out? And I said, he looks at me and goes, why? And I said, well, the infield fly rule. I said, he should automatically have been out on the play. I said, because it was popped up right to him with the bases loaded. And he looks at me and he says, infield fly rule. I said, yeah. I said, bases loaded or first and second, nobody out, one out. I said, when the balls popped up, I said, it's actually designed to protect the runners. It's not designed for my team to get an out. It's actually designed to protect their team. I said, he should have been called out right away. I said, loud authoritatively. I said, and by doing that, I said, it probably would have kept them from running around the bases. I said, as soon as they heard the guy was out, he goes, you don't say. I said, yeah. I said, that's the rule. He said, well, what do you think I should do about it? Because they're all jumping up and down the other dugout. Now, I'm looking over at the other dugout, and they're hugging this kid. He got a grand slam on a ball that went 60 feet. And I said, you know, Bill, just forget about it. It's okay. I said, it's not going to make a difference in the final score. I said, let him enjoy his moment. But, I mean, when you go out there to, quote, discuss it, because I wasn't out there arguing and throwing my hands in the air. I just walked out to the guy, hey, Bill. That's about the tone I used. Hey, Bill. I mean, I've known Bill for a long time. And he looks at me and goes, really? You know, at that point, your ability to win the argument or to win the discussion, it's pretty much off the boards. Because when you go out there and you know the rule and they don't, what do you expect them to do? But he looked at me and said, really? I said, explain that to me. Meanwhile, Sean was actually at the game going insane in the background. They had security had to take him out. We then had to explain to Sean that his nephew wasn't there. He was at the wrong game. What?
That's one thing I did not yell over the weekend was infield fly rule. But I have to be on the lookout for that now in the next tournament.
But what he really? Explain that to me. Thought, we're in trouble.
We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.